We here are all such innovative people. So I am telling you, if you want to change the world, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to build the Iron Man suit, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to play theme music during your convocation speech like a badass, we're at Georgia Tech. We can do that. I am doing that.
Well, that sucked. I know that normally the intro to the show is a little bit more upbeat. We talk a little bit more about, you know, this is the one-stop shop for all the Atlanta sports podcasts and Atlanta sports stuff you need. That's normally what we go for. But since this is the Hawks episode, there really wasn't any other way to start this episode. It sucked being an Atlanta Hawks fan for the last couple weeks. I did miss last week, and I apologize for that. Some of it was I didn't have much to say. Some of it was I was incredibly busy. I've got a lot of balls up in the air, a couple things that happened, yada, yada, yada. Either way, the fact of the matter is we did not miss much, right? I mean, when we left off, the Hawks had won at least a couple games in a row, and that was kind of where the good vibes stopped. You know, they beat the Bulls and they beat the Pistons, but ever since then it's just been a very, very quick downgrade and mood downer and everything. So we're gonna talk about it today, and we're gonna kind of wrap up the season real fast. We're gonna give our final thoughts, and probably gonna repeat myself for about the fourth time in the past 5 weeks about what this team is, right, and what this team hopefully will be next year. So to wrap up what happened after we left off, the Hawks went on a pretty bad losing streak to start off the end of the year, and it goes back to the game against the Mavericks to Thursday, April 4th, where they lost 109-95. Lost by a pretty significant margin against the Mavericks on the road. Then they got blown out by Denver in Denver, 142-110. Both games, you know, the Hawks offense did not really show up. DJ did not have great games. Jalen Johnson was back and playing relatively well, but you know, Trae Young still hurt. Basically, everybody was doing what they can, but in all fairness, stopping the buzzsaw that is the Denver Nuggets is never easy. Not by any stretch of the imagination. That was followed by a 2-overtime loss to the Miami Heat, so at least they made it hard on him. DeJounte Murray did have a triple-double in that game, so I will give him props. He also took 31 shots to get to 29 points. And he had 4 steals, but he also had 4 turnovers. He was a +4 overall, so he made somewhat of a difference, but not a big one. I don't want to get too deep into the numbers because there's a lot of games. The most embarrassing one was the Hawks losing in Atlanta to the Charlotte Hornets. And this one was at least defensible in that DeJounte Murray did not play, but Trae Young did play. Jalen Johnson also did not play. Neither did Onyeka Okongwu. This is where the injury problem started, as Jalen and Onyeka would both get hurt and would miss basically the rest of the season. But Trae Young did come back in this game, did play 21 minutes, had 14-11 in those 21 minutes on 5-of-5 shooting. He did also have 5 turnovers, which became a theme kind of towards the end, but he was a +16. The starters were all pluses. It was the bench that really blew the game, and you knew it was going to be bad when Dylan Windler was playing the most minutes off the bench. Kobe Bufkin even didn't have I can't really sing his praises too much because he shot 4-of-12 from the field for 11 points. That's a bad game. And then the Hawks lost to the Timberwolves. They kept it close. They only lost 109-106. And that was with the skeleton. I mean, DJ was back for that game, but you still had Trae Young on a slight minutes restriction. Your starting lineup was still kind of what you're expecting. You just didn't have, like, Jalen Johnson in the starting lineup. But Rudy Gobert had 25-19. They did do a decent job holding Anthony Edwards to 14 points, but the Minnesota defense did a great job holding the Hawks down and were able to take that win. That was followed by an embarrassing end to the season against the Indiana Pacers. The Indiana Pacers, the Hawks just do not seem to know how to guard them. They have not figured it out yet because the Indiana Pacers have scored over 150 points against the Hawks multiple times this year. And if there's ever a way to encompass this season and kind of encapsulate what it's been like to be a Hawks fan, it was this game. Miles Turner had 31 points on 17 shots. Pascal Siakam had a cool 28 on 18. You had a double-double from Tyrese Halliburton. You had 10 points from Andrew Nembhard. You had three guys in double figures off the bench. It just was not, all around, was not a good time for the Hawks. You did have 32 from DeJounte Murray on 13 of 19 shooting, so he had himself a good game. And Mo Guy off the bench in the last game had 19 points and 9 rebounds with 3 blocks and 2 steals. So there's at least a flash of what he could potentially be if everything goes right and he develops the way you want him to. This took the Hawks into the play-in, and this is where the interesting part started. So Vit Kreschke, who has been a big rotation piece for the Atlanta Hawks for the last like 20 games, to the point where he was starting basketball games for the Hawks, he was on a 2-way deal. And what that means is, you know, he can get shuttled back and forth between the G League and the NBA standard roster, like the main roster. But the guys on 2-ways are not eligible for the playoffs. They would have to be converted into a full roster deal, like a guaranteed roster deal, similar to what Trent Forrest had done earlier in the year. The Hawks elected to not go that route. You know, a guy that had started games for them and had played significant minutes off the bench ever since the injuries to guys like Trae Young, and he was kind of pressed into action. He's played average 20 minutes a game, at probably even more than that. He has been a significant part of the rotation. He's been a great connector for the team. The Hawks decided, nah, we don't want to waive anybody. We don't want to waive Wesley Matthews or Trent Forrest or any of those other guys. You know, those guys might be important. We're gonna leave Vit off this postseason roster. And that didn't make a ton of sense to me. I understand not wanting to go through the roster machinations, but Trent Forrest wasn't giving you anything. No disrespect to Trent Forrest whatsoever. I like the kid's hustle, but Vit Kreschke provides just as much playmaking, just as much, you know, probably more defense, or if not, at least more switchability on defense, and he's not an absolute zero on offense. So I don't know why that move was not making, but I digress. It wouldn't have mattered because the Hawks went into Chicago playing for their postseason fate, and they got absolutely trounced 131-116, gave the Bulls their highest scoring quarter of the season in the first quarter, which I said this to Georgia Tech host Steven, who's also on this podcast channel. I believe the Hawks have held that distinction for like 5 different teams in the NBA this season. Like, the Hawks are very, very good at letting another team score a bunch of points in a quarter and setting their own little season best. And that's exactly what they did against the Bulls in this game. So, in this game, DeJounte Murray was the best player on the Hawks. He had 30 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists on 11 of 21 shooting, 2 steals. He was a negative 6. Trae Young was a negative 27. Despite playing 43 minutes and having 22 points and 10 assists, he did have 6 turnovers. He did shoot 4 of 12 from the field. He was still struggling with that finger injury. He was wearing a whole finger brace at the beginning, the first half of the game, and it was clearly affecting his ability to dribble, his ability to shoot. Even when he switched to just taping the fingers, it didn't help a ton. He did get to the foul line, took 13 free throws, so he did his best to be as effective as he could be, but it was very clear when he and DJ were out there, the chemistry just was not there, and we'll talk about that more later. DeAndre Hunter had his worst game probably of the season, 3 of 16 from the field, a ghastly number. At least Clint Capella had 22 and 17 with only missing 4 shots. Did not add much else in the box score, but 22 and 17 will get you plenty. Bogdan Bogdanovic, after a rough start, ended up with 21 points, 8 of 18, 2 blocks and 2 steals on top of that. And then the issue was off the bench. The Hawks just really didn't have anybody to go to. Kobe Bufkin was conspicuous in his absence from the rotation. I feel like the Hawks could have used his perimeter defense in this game, but Quinn just seemed like he didn't want to go to the rookie. The top guys on the bench that played was Garrison Matthews, who played 13 minutes, and then Bruno Fernando and Wes Matthews played 10 apiece. So Quinn had 5.5 guys that he trusted, and it wasn't even really 5.5, it was 5 guys. On the Bulls end of things, because there wouldn't be a Hawks season without doing, or Hawks game this season without doing some stupid crap like this. The Hawks allowed Kobe White to score his season high, the career high, I actually think, in points, 42 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. Now, Kobe White has been very good this year. He's in the running for most improved player, so I will give him his flowers. He has done a lot to improve, but he's not 15 of 21 shooting from the field good. He's not 42 points pretty much just breaking people down one-on-one. He's not that good. On top of that, DeMar DeRozan had his typical game, 22, 6 and 9, 10 and 19 from the field. Nikola Vucevic had 24 and 12. He and Clint were kind of giving it to each other back and forth. And Andre Drummond even got in and had 4 points and four rebounds, drew a double technical foul on Bruno Fernando for pushing him basically and talking to him, and Bruno didn't really say anything, but either way, just not a good game. Not a good game from the Hawks. Look at the overall stats: 57% from the field for the Bulls, 42% from the 3-point line, and they had the same amount of 3-point makes as the Hawks, and the Hawks took 11 more threes. Not a great recipe for success. The Hawks did outpace him in assists, but the Bulls dominated the glass and dominated the paint, had 8 blocks to the Hawks, too. It was an embarrassing way to go out, but it was par for the course. I will say, as a Hawks fan, as someone going in, I feel like I know this team pretty well. I didn't have any faith the Hawks were going to win this game. I didn't think the Hawks really stood much. I figured if they could potentially get by Chicago if they play their best game, but I didn't think they were going to even get past whoever they played after the 7-8 game. Because this Hawks team has regressed, and if anything, the Hawks are at least moving in a direction, because the last 2 years they've just stood in place. They've run on the treadmill. At least now they're starting to fall off the treadmill. So if you want to look for silver linings, there's at least been a direction. The issue is the direction is down. This team regressed, and there's no other way to say it. The offense got worse. They weren't even top 10 in the league this year. The defense was bottom 5. I think they were 27th to end the season. They were just not good all around. And the issue is it's not necessarily a talent issue. The Hawks have plenty of talent on this team. Now, coming into this game, they were missing Onyeka Okongwu. They were missing Jalen Johnson. Two very integral parts. The Hawks would have gone 7 deep if they had those two guys available, which they did not. But they also could have gone 6 deep even with those guys out if they had converted Vic Kreschke. Either way, it's neither here nor there. So the Hawks were banged up, but so were the Bulls. The Bulls had some guys out with injury as well. Ayo Dosunmu was not playing 100%. Neither was Andre Drummond. The time for excuses is done. There's no more time to be giving out reasons. And I've been using reasons and excuses for the Hawks for the last 2 years, right? When the Hawks were 500 the first time after the Eastern Conference Finals trip, it was, oh, well, Trae Young just needs a little help, right? I mean, he got bottled up by he had a great defensive team. They just had a great game plan. If Trae just had another shot creator next to him, then everything would be okay. So they went out and they got Tony Ressler went out and got DeJounte Murray. Traded our draft future in the process. And the Hawks were 500 again. But you know what? It was Nate McMillan's system. Nate just wasn't a great coach. Once you get Quinn Snyder in there, Quinn's going to fix it up. Quinn's going to know exactly where to put those guys. Quinn's going to know the right spots. He's going to know the right buttons. He's a great coach. And I'm not making fun of anybody. I'm not being sarcastic. This is stuff that I said. This is stuff that I believed. And even coming into this season after Quinn's going to have a full season, I still wasn't like, I don't think that they'll be top 5 in the East, but I think that they have a shot to be, you know, top 7, at least as long as they show improvement and give me a reason to continue to believe that this can work. And realistically, if everything had clicked, the East is top heavy. The top 2 teams, Boston and Milwaukee, are worlds away from everybody else. The Hawks, if everything had clicked, could have been up towards the top 5. So really, I overestimated the Eastern Conference coming into this season. But the Hawks vastly underperformed what they could have been. And it just goes to show what we've been talking about on this podcast for the past month is still the case, and it's not changing, and it needs to happen. The Atlanta Hawks have to make some changes. And I hate when people say stuff like that, and I hate that I'm saying it now because it's very wide-ranging and there's no specifics. So I'm going to try to hop into specifics. But the Hawks have to shake up the starting lineup. At least, you know, multiple people from the starting lineup, I'd say at least 2, have to be seen out of town. Because it's clearly not working. They ran this back after trading John Collins in the offseason. They moved Jalen Johnson in, which was a net positive. Jalen helped the starting rotation. But you now have to get 2 other guys out there. I like Clint Capela. Clint Capela has lost a step. He's not consistent enough night to night to be your starting center. And you just re-upped Onyeka Okongwu. You've got to justify that to an extent. And if not, if you keep him as a high-priced backup center, he's good in that role, so you can deal with that. But Clint is no longer what he was. So you have to find a way to get off his money. I would argue DeAndre Hunter as well. Unless you keep him as a 6th man and you find a way to bring in another guy who can start at the three over him, which would require either very fortuitous draft luck or a guy coming available through trade that the other team really wants, DeJounte Murray. I'll talk about that in a second. Or, Tony Ressler just decides to pay the tax and we go out and get Paul George. That third option is not happening. There's no way on God's green earth that Tony Ressler's paying the tax. So one of the first two has to happen. And then the other guy that probably one of the point guards is going to go. And that's been reported for the last couple months by NBA insiders. And I feel like it's common knowledge, common sense at this point. They clearly don't work together. When both guys play by themselves, they look much, much, much better, right? When DJ was playing without Trae Young, the Hawks were, they weren't great, but they were at least, like, their defense got a little bit better. The offense was a little bit worse. That's kind of what took the Hawks out of the top 10. I believe during that stretch, the offensive rating was like 14th or 13th in the NBA, but the defense was up to 18th. So, and then when Trae plays by himself, we've seen what Trae plays like without DJ. I mean, the Hawks have had top 10 offenses with Trae Young at the helm basically since he came into the league. So the fact of the matter is they're just better apart than they are together. They just can't seem to figure out how to make the help the other. And I don't want to assign blame because I think it's both. You know, Trae's never been the most comfortable off the ball. I think he's gotten better this year. But I also think DJ's not that comfortable off the ball. And the issue is with the way the offense has kind of been run, it's become a your turn, my turn thing, which is so easy to stagnate. I mean, you saw that in Brooklyn when they had James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. It was all got three guys that only knew how to be effective off the dribble. There's no Chris Middleton on this team. There's no Paul George on this team, right? There's nobody like that who knows how to be effective off the ball and on the ball. There's nobody that can toggle back and forth. And while that's a hard thing to find, the Hawks have to do it. So that's where my main kind of, this is a trade scenario that I've seen kind of floated, and I'm not going to get into the specifics necessarily, but I think the Hawks need to call up the New Orleans Pelicans, and I think they need to ask if DJ for Brandon Ingram is a viable, you know, trade framework, because Brandon Ingram would be very, very helpful to this team. One, I think it would, the salaries more or less would match. You could probably, you might have to throw in an extra guy here or there. You could figure that out. But it would be beneficial for the Pelicans because the Pelicans have been looking for a point guard for about 2 years now. Point Zion is the thing, but you can also do DeJounte at the point and have Zion be a lob threat, kind of a do-everything type guy. You might be pushing DJ off the ball a little bit, but you also it might help Zion stay healthy. Who knows? On the Hawks side of things, Brandon Ingram is the best case scenario because, like I said, you're not getting Paul George unless you do a sign and trade, which I don't think the Clippers would be open to. And I don't even think Paul wants to leave LA. So if you get a guy like Brandon Ingram has shown when he's healthy, which is the biggest question mark with him, is healthy and to an extent defense. I think he's an okay defender. You'll have to upgrade the number two spot in terms of defense. But if you do that, you then push DeAndre Hunter to the bench where he can focus on being a six man where he thrived earlier in the year. So if you're keeping DeAndre, he has to be the six man. He cannot be your starting three next year because he has shown time and time again that is not the right role for him. He is either your sixth man or he's not on this team. So if you get a guy like B.I. who has become a very good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter, but he's also still a good one-on-one scorer, he can kind of get to the rim, he's good in the mid-range, he still has the shake, he's averaged 20-plus points for like five straight years now, picking up a guy like that is exactly what you need. So that is the framework I would look for. If you're going to be the one to trade Trae Young, then you're looking for insane draft equity or a very, very, very good player. And you're going to rebuild around DJ. But the reason I say you build around Trae Young, and I was thinking about this the other day, DeJounte Murray is a safe choice because DeJounte Murray, I think you can argue, is easier to build around. And by that, I don't mean that Trey's hard to build around. It's just Trae requires specific things. And the Hawks have not provided that in any time he's been there. Trae Young is a fantastic playmaker. He is an offensive system unto himself. He's almost guaranteed to give you 25-plus and 10-plus every night, right? And he's done that year in and year out with the Atlanta Hawks. But he's not the greatest defender. He got better this year. He figured out how to use his quickness. He's become more than the worst defender. He's become
bad. He's no longer downright horrendous. He's just not great. But you need specific things around him. You need 3-and-D wings. You need bigger guys to handle bigger assignments. You need guys that can catch and shoot and play defense. And the Hawks just haven't found enough of those guys. With DJ, you can kind of surround him with a couple of... There's a little bit more leeway because he is 6'4". He is really long, so you don't have to completely hide him. And if you just get another perimeter defender, you can put DJ in a role that is great for him where he is playing free safety. He's trying to create turnovers. He's looking for steals. That's how he made the all-defensive team in San Antonio. So with DJ, you have less like specifics that you have to hit, but you also are kind of accepting a, I would say, a lower ceiling, right? Because there's only so much that DJ can do. DJ's not the greatest three-point shooter. He doesn't get to the rim a ton. He lives in the mid-range. And that, we've seen time and time again. I mean, just look at DeMar DeRozan's career. You know, in the modern day, that is not necessarily a viable way to play offense.
I don't want to get too analytically inclined. I don't want to get too, you know, stat nerdy on you guys here. But there's a finite level of value that comes from a guy who lives in the mid-range. And DeMar DeRozan, again, is the best example. He's a great bucket getter. He averages 20 points a game every year. And whenever he's been the number one or the number two guy, his teams cap out at like the second round. So, and we've seen a ceiling with a Trae Young team. When everything clicks, you can get to the conference finals. You just got to build a team around him. So the Hawks have started making changes. They just recently hired Golden State's vice president of basketball strategy and team counsel, Ansi Saleh. I believe I'm Saleh. So I'm saying their name right. I'm saying it the way that I think it would be. But either way, he worked closely with Bob Myers, closely with Mike Dunleavy. He was previously the Spurs CEO of RC Buford. He's got some experience. So the Hawks are at least adding to the front office. He will be an assistant general manager. So ideally, he just drowns out Nick Resler, and the Reslers just start signing the checks and back away. Either way, I am on the record as saying when it comes to roster construction, Trae Young is the guy to build around because he gives you the higher ceiling. You know that when he's on the floor, as long as he is surrounded by somewhat adequate talent, you're going to have a top 10 offense. The issue now is you have to rebuild this team defensively. The best way, take a cue from the early 2000s Philadelphia 76ers. Trae Young is the Allen Iverson in this case, right? He is a singular dominant offensive force who can do almost everything. You've got to surround him with the Eric Snows, the Dikembe Mutombos, right? You got to surround him with those kind of guys, those defensive role players, the Rajah Bells of the world, that will go out there, get stops, hit some open shots, and just kind of, you know, help out where the goal of any time you have a superstar is to highlight the strengths and make sure that they are prominent every time they have the ball and hide the weaknesses. Make sure the weaknesses don't show up a ton so that then we're nitpicking, right? And that's what the Hawks have to do here. They have to rebuild this defense. I still think Quinn Snyder is the right coach. He has shown in Utah that he knows what he's doing in terms of scheming stuff up. I think that maybe personnel this year, I think that he could have done some things better, but I also think that there was a plan in place at least. The Hawks have got to build the defense. I think Jalen Johnson coming back and having a fully healthy season will be very beneficial. Him and Onyeka Okongwu, if you run them out as the 4-5, that's a very switchable front line. That's a front line that you can kind of build around. And if you get one more guy out there on the wing, in addition to if you make the Brandon Ingram trade, if you go get a two-guard who can guard up, if you get like an Alex Caruso type, right? If you get an Austin Reeves type, if you get a Patrick Beverley, a Javon Carter, gets somebody that will guard relentlessly and their entire offensive role is hit open jumpers, that is the ideal form for the Atlanta Hawks, and that is hopefully what they will be doing. And you also have to take into account the draft. With the Hawks in the lottery, there's a chance that the pick gets a little bit higher. So if they end up a little bit higher and maybe Stephon Castle falls to him, Stephon Castle is my personal favorite prospect in this entire draft class. Maybe they end up with Matas Buzelis, who can play the Denny Avdija role. from Washington, although on a good team, where he does does a little bit of everything. He's a good defender. He's a good enough outside shooter. He can get to the rim, attack, do various other things. Maybe you get Matas Bezos. Maybe the Hawks look at Onyeka and go, we would rather a staggered center rotation, so let's go with Donovan Clingan or a guy like that. Donovan Clingan would be a great defensive addition to this team. He can lock down the paint by himself. Not to mention he's a playmaker now. He's shown passing chops, especially as the season has gone on with UConn, to where he can definitely, kind of take some of the playmaking burden off Trey. And it would be in a way where you can also run give and goes with him. There's just so many different little things that you can unlock with that. Maybe they go with like a Jacoby Walter, who's a knockdown shooter and plays a little defense at the two spot. Maybe they go, there's just a bunch of different avenues the Hawks can go, as long as the focus is improving on the defense. Because I think if you improve on the defense, the offense doesn't have to be top five, right? The way that it looked coming into this year was the offense had to be top five every night. Everything had to go right for the offense, and they had to outscore the opponent 145 to 139. That is not the most viable way to play basketball. And you saw it in a lot of games this year where the Hawks would score 120, 125, 130 points, and they would give up 135, 140, 142, 157. You can't have that going on every other week with your basketball team. So if the Hawks fix the defense, I think that there's more wins to follow. And luckily, there's guys out there who will play defense. You just have to be able to find them and be willing to deal with the fact that maybe they're not the greatest offensive threat. Maybe they're not Bogdan Bogdanovic, who can play off the ball and on the ball and can score from all three levels and has a buttery smooth jumper. Maybe they don't have that, but the Hawks should be able to live with that. Especially because I think having Trae Young as the playmaker will help cover up some of those warts if they're getting completely wide open three-pointers. So that is going to do it. I've rambled long enough. We'll get back in the next couple weeks talking about free agents that are out there, more draft targets, news on extensions, player reviews, kind of season recaps, summing everything up individually, player by player, as we continue to talk about the Hawks game. But, that's not the only thing we talk about on this podcast. We also talk about Georgia Tech, right? Spring practice just ended. A lot of guys hopped in the transfer portal, so we'll give you the news on that. Also talk about the Atlanta Braves. The Braves are off to a hot start, despite the injuries in the starting rotation and the starting lineup. Three significant players on the IL all at once. Braves are still winning. Also the Falcons. The NFL draft's coming up. That's like the best time of year, right? Falcons are about to finish up their offseason additions. Maybe they'll add a couple veterans here and there after the draft. Got to figure out there's only a couple more holes left to fill. We talk about all of that here on What's the Good Word because it's like a buffet, right? You walk up, you get to pick what you want. If you want everything that's there, we got it. If you just want the prime rib, we've got that. Maybe you just want the mac and cheese. Guess what? We got it. So that's going to do it. As I said, only one way to end these shows. The Tech fans know. We'll educate you. If you have a question, just leave it in the comments or email me at joshuajulian26.com. If you don't know what the question is, I'll tell you what the question is, and then you can email me and ask for the answer. What's the good word?